Hello and welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selina Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
So welcome to a very special Project Love podcast. Last week, we were invited to an event called Thoroughly Modern Marriage by Knot and Pop, the wedding planners, and the Ace Hotel. And this is actually a live recording of the event itself, where we hosted a panel on love and marriage. And we heard from three amazing, wonderful couples, all at different stages of their married life. And we got to grill them and ask them our questions. And also we had an audience full of bride and grooms to be that had attended the wedding event, who also got to ask the couple their questions as well. Because so much focus is on the wedding day itself when it comes to getting ready for marriage, and very little on the marriage ahead of you. You know, the wedding day is day one of that marriage. And so we were so thrilled when Knot and Pop invited us to this event, because it was a chance to really start that conversation about what it takes to have a happy and long-lasting marriage. And so this recording is all about that from the Ace Hotel live, and you'll get to hear from our wonderful couples, and you'll hear me say our wonderful couples a lot, and it sounds a little bit like Cilla Black
channeling her inner Cilla Black.
And I did apologize to the couples for that, but it slips out quite a lot.
It was fascinating, and I think, I mean, when we were in the middle of doing it, I was like, wow, I love interviewing couples about relationships and like how they, you know, help to cultivate love and keep the love flowing. So this is definitely the beginning of more like that.
Yeah. Enjoy. So welcome.
First of all, thank you very much to the Ace Hotel and to Knot and Pop for organising this amazing event. And it's really exciting to see so many people here kind of preparing for their celebrations of love and their wedding days. But we wanted to spend the next hour taking our focus away from the wedding day and looking instead at what comes next, the marriage. And this is why we have three wonderfully generous couples who've come along today to share their experiences of getting married and staying married and how to keep that love flowing. So before we get started, over to you, Vicky, for some introductions.
My name is Vicky and this is Selina, and we are the founders of Project Love. And for the last 5 years, we have been making love our business. And our mission is to inspire and empower busy women and men to create lives and relationships that they love. And we do that through one-to-one coaching, online courses, life design products, and our popular podcast show. So we're here today to learn from these three wonderful couples who are all at different stages of their married life. As Selina said, we're here not so much to talk about the wedding day itself, but the bigger journey ahead of you of love and marriage. So without further ado, I'd love to start some introductions from our couples. If you can, I feel a bit like Cilla Black. Sorry if I say our. Sorry if I say our couples. Like, it will slip out sometimes. Could you introduce yourselves and tell everyone how long you've been married?
Hello, I'm Francesca, and I'm married to Gemma to my left, and we have been married just over a year.
Yay!
Yay! First year's the toughest, they say. I'm Gemma. I've also been married to Francesca. No previous marriages, just Fran.
I'm Kate, and I'm married to James, and we've been married for 6 years.
I'm James, and we've been married how long?
Well, I'm Bill, and I'm married to Nancy, and we have been married for, I think, 29 years.
Wow!
And I think it's going to last.
I met Bill at my boyfriend's party in Toronto in 1981, and I didn't run off. I didn't plan for this to happen, but anyway, it did. And so we got married. We lived together for quite a few years, then we got married in 1989, and we're still married, and it just goes too quickly.
Thank you. So the first question, did you feel that getting married changed your relationship in any way? So do you feel different after you actually got married?
I definitely do. I don't quite know that it just kind of felt that something had been tied around the pair of us, and it just made a difference somehow.
In a nice way?
In a wonderful way. In that kind of way that you just feel safe and secure, but equally empowering. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Something
different to say.
I can. Yeah, how did you feel, James?
Well, I'm going to let a secret out. I was actually married before. And anyway, it's another story. But meeting Kate and then marrying Kate and having a bigger, more powerful and more, dare I say, over-the-top wedding was such a character of you, but also a character of our relationship. And marrying you was such quite a big deal, but it felt so right.
I too think it's intangible in a way, but getting married, we'd lived together for 6 years, I think, and getting married was just kind of exciting for our friends to know and our family. And it does just seal it somehow. And we got presents. It was amazing. We got some wonderful presents. But it did feel different to me, and I don't know if it did or does for you.
Yeah, I think in terms of our personal relationship, there wasn't any big change because, as you said, we lived together for 6 years. But it meant because there was some big discussion as to whether, as we weren't married, we'd be entitled to a house. He said, why don't they just get married? So it became easier to deal with bureaucracy, but no real difference in our personal relationship.
How about you guys?
I guess a slightly more romantic note. no, I think that, I guess like one of your biggest fears in getting married is that things will change because you're sort of happy as everything is, and we'd been together for 4 years before we got engaged, and like I didn't want anything to change, so in my mind it was not going to change. But I think obviously we're just 1 year in, and it's still a bit of a novelty, and it's still like we sort of laugh, and I'm like, I got a wife. And so there's something really like charming and lovely about that. And also, like, I always say that you can now like plan a holiday a year in advance and not worry too much that, you know, you think you're going to make it. So I think it's it does change things, but like kind of not the day-to-day sort of lives that you've grown to sort of love and lead together.
Yeah, I would completely agree with what you say, that it does feel different just because it's a novelty, and it feels like I'm like a missus and that's actually my mum, and it doesn't really make sense in my head that I'm a missus. But yeah, there's something very special about it.
I think that's why it's so important as well to actually talk about it, because what you're talking about is like a bit of an identity shift, going from a missus, which is what your mum was. And so it's just like, you know, the actual act of getting married and what it does to you at the time and afterwards is really significant, I think, psychologically and emotionally. So that's why these panels are great.
And how do you think marriage changes over time? Do you think it does? And
like how? One's marriage or the system of marriage?
Both, like your personal experience, but also like a general kind of perception of marriage.
God, it's just, isn't it wonderful now? Because, you know, anyone can get married anytime to anybody they like. And I just love that. And then the longer you're married, you know, like Bill says, like you're going to stick together, right? And that's a very nice feeling. I don't know how it's changed, except that it's more open and inclusive. And I just think that's wonderful.
Yeah, no, you're right. The institution has changed in that it's more inclusive. But I think our relationship hasn't changed. Mm. It's just as good as it always was.
Oh my God, that's so good.
And actually, Bill has got a book on his lap, which he wrote, and in it there's a whole essay on love. So you actually studied love.
Well, yes, it was a juvenile piece. My second published paper was on love. Well, as you noted, there was a footnote that said, I think that my paper was somewhat simplistic. But I think it has some points, and I'd urge you all to go out and buy a copy of the book.
Well, we have to say, of course, it is out of print, but there are copies sitting there on Amazon, and so you can. And it's actually a very serious philosophical essay on love, which I...
You can get it for £1.85 from Amazon.
But seriously, Bill, would you recommend people do study love? Do you think it's helped you to understand marriage and inquire into relationships in a way that's been helpful?
Yes, it's our second marriage. We had... We each had a trial with other people. On the basis of which we were establishing a successful relationship. Now, I think a study of love as an academic discipline is important and is helpful. So I urge you all to read my paper.
Thank you. No, we really do. We do say at Project Love that, you know, actually study love. It's something that we think we should all just instinctively know how to do it. But actually, the more you kind of study it and learn it, it really does help you to learn how to cultivate love in yourself, in your life, and in your relationship. So thanks, Bill.
But that word is so overused. So when you watch X Factor on a Saturday, not that I watch X Factor, it's such an overused word. And it's only until you actually feel it, because I don't think you can actually put a name on it, until you actually feel it, can you really connect and understand it. So I told Kate I loved her in 10 days of meeting you, pretty much. And that feeling, a bit like a quite good French cheese, has got better and better and just keeps on getting better. And the more you get to know someone, the more you experience, the more you get intimate and all those things, it just gets more intense and really quite powerful.
I love that. So the idea of actually falling more and more in love after you got married. Rather, because I think sometimes there's the idea or the fear that you can, like, the peak is the wedding and the marriage, and then it's like, oh, here we go.
But you do, I mean, you do, we've had some really rough times, but boy, it does just get better. If you go through those times, it's just amazing, really amazing. It has to do with, you know, accepting the other person how they are and, like, really accepting that, and then you become you're better.
That's an amazing point, though. That's an amazing point, is that, dare I say, on a reference previous, mm-hmm. my previous always tried to change me. Kate's never, ever, 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 far from the opposite, to change me at all. She's always almost encouraged me to be the person who I am. And in a way, when we first met, I kind of hid away from that. But she's completely pushed me to be exactly how I am. And it's so amazing feeling.
So much so I made him come and humiliate himself today and sit on a panel talking about our marriage.
How about you guys?
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess, like, our first year of marriage has been, we've had, like, a lot of, like, personal stuff going on, and it has been probably the hardest year of either of our lives, I won't cry. And I think that going through that, as you said, completely shows you what your marriage is about, and how, if you can support each other through that, then you can support each other through in there. I also cried all day at my wedding, so this is just a sample of what actually happened then. Beyond, oh, that's sweet, she's crying. It was like, is she actually having an emotional breakdown?
Do you want to add anything to that?
I'm trying to think how to best put this. I think that our marriage has got, I mean, obviously we're only not in year one, well, moving to year two, but I think it gets stronger. I suppose I fall in love more with the things that Fran doesn't like about herself. So I think, like, obviously the good parts everyone gets to see and share and hopefully love, but it's the sort of private times or the sad times or the angry times or all those emotions that you perhaps wouldn't necessarily put yourself in that vulnerable position to, like, show someone, like, actually they're the bits that, not that I love most, but I love equally. And I think that that also keeps you strong and hopefully, like, in good stead for a long and healthy and happy marriage, because actually, like, there isn't very much that she could do that I wouldn't continue loving her. But don't hear that bit. Keep you on your toes and stuff, you know. But, like, yeah, like, I kind of feel like I've seen it all.
Amazing. Okay, so how do you support one another in your careers and achieving goals and making your dreams happen?
So I think, firstly, it's talking about them and even knowing what those goals and dreams and ambitions are. So, like, for us, we literally don't stop talking about sort of everything, nothing, but we just talk all the time. And so I feel like I'm able to sort of remind her of her goals and ambitions, because sometimes you just get quite complacent and, like, life just goes on, and then before you know it, it's like another year gone. But I can sort of remind her of the things that she loves and she's passionate about, or you know, even small things, like if she comes home from a long day of work, like, have dinner ready and don't hassle her if she's late for something, because I know that she would have rather have been there on time and it wasn't, like, her fault. Talking about her like you're not here. But yeah, so I think that, for me, the two things is, like, supporting throughout, like, as things are happening and, like, pressures and crunches and stresses are happening in life, and then just reminding you of the things that you love and trying to, like, enjoy it with you as well, or, like, try and experience it together and make that, even if it's not your, like, full-time passion, but, like, just try and take an interest so that you can do things together.
Who else would like to share how they support one another's dreams, goals?
Okay. We support each other and have for years by being involved in projects together. I mean, the first project was transforming the post-communist world. Nancy was covering the wars and revolutions, and I was spending George Soros's money developing the education system, and this enabled us to go to a revolution in Kyrgyzstan, a war in Bosnia, and those are bonding experiences. So I would strongly recommend getting involved in those kinds of projects. And now, of course, we've got a new project. We're creating a brand, Farmers. I urge you to go online and look at www.welshlavender.com, where you can buy amazing products, which we are together creating.
I'm going to strongly disagree, because James and I don't necessarily work well together in business, and because I don't brief properly when I'm asking him to do something, and he doesn't have patience with me like he does with all his other clients that are so much more challenging than I am. So I strongly suggest not opening a lavender farm with each other or going to war. All the other amazing things you guys... Yeah, don't even... I can't even get him to do my business cards. No, nothing. Just no, don't do it. Keep them separate. It's much healthier.
But saying that, with words of encouragement, I'm my own worst enemy and I'm constantly a struggling artist. Kate supports me 100% and gives me that amazing feeling of not self-belief, because that's quite arrogant, but that kind of support and understanding and kind of pushes me to do exactly what I want to do, going back to what I was saying earlier. And likewise, of course, because, you know, Kate used to be a stylist before she does bridal, and I never forget the old Muse House being full of brides getting their wedding dresses, and I'm upstairs in my studio trying to work, and every Saturday I had to hide up there for the entire day because I wasn't allowed down because it was full of women having their bridal dresses. So I've supported you massively. And
big up to you, James. But do you talk a lot about your businesses with each other?
The fundamental foundation for any marriage is communication, and we were saying earlier to you that even if it comes down to kind of looking at your ex from 10 years ago's Instagram account or checking them out on Facebook just to have a nose at what they're doing now, because it's a kind of, we're all curious of those things, but it's about not doing it in secret. It's about being honest about everything that you do. There's nothing wrong with kind of, you know, looking. And if your partner's jealous about those things when they're now married to you and you have an incredible life together, then there's something fundamentally wrong with your relationship. Because,
but also, like, for example, when we're out and we go to parties, kind of at dinner, and then I'm flirting or Kate's flirting.
Jerry Springer here today.
But it's that experience where you kind of, it's an element of trust, isn't it? And it's kind of like, you know, in your limits, you know exactly what the deal is. And it's like, I love you with all my heart, so I'm on the...
What he was trying to say was, if he sees somebody that's attractive in a bar, he can say to me, God, look how gorgeous she is. And I'll go, yeah, she's beautiful, and carry on eating my dinner. Whereas he doesn't need to do it in private because he's got nothing to hide, because he's not going to run off with the bird that's just walked into the bar. That, I think that's what you're trying to say. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I've got a question, actually, because Bill and Nancy, you obviously went through a massive career change and you know, went to Wales and started a business there. Was it both your ideas? How did that happen? Like, how did that come about? Was it one of your ideas and then the other one got on board?
It's a fascinating, utter accident. It almost continues to be. The really short version was that in 2003, in Wales, on our farm, on a beautiful spring evening, I told a farmer neighbor that I wanted to plant some lavender, and I meant a hedge. And because we had one in this wonderful place we lived in Oxford, courtesy of the university. And Baden said, well, gee, you know, wanted to know all about lavender. He came back a couple of weeks later and said, the government is trying to get people to diversify, farmers to diversify. They're not taking the money. I bet you could get a grant to plant a field. And I thought, oh, that sounds neat. But because you probably wouldn't pay to plant a field of lavender out of your own pocket, even though we could, and I felt rather guilty. But I got £1,000 and planted 2,000 lavenders after doing loads of research. And it grew. And I just kept going to carrying on as a journalist for years with this lavender field growing and doing nothing with it except for enjoying it when I was back from Iraq or wherever I was going, cutting it and drying it and selling it, but with no business plan, when someone came along and said, you know, you should really do something with this. So fast forward, we experimented with distillation, we started distilling, and then we started making body care products. And my job at Canadian Broadcasting Corporation had become pretty intolerable because the budgets were decreasing and I wasn't able to go to the scene of the story any longer. I was pretty much doing that sort of news with lipstick and jackets in the bureau in London that could be 2,000 miles away. And I hated it. And Bill, this is one of the most supportive times he was with me in our whole life, was he said, just hang in there with that awful job because they can't fire you. But I got enough money to go out and feel like with my chin up, and then the business started to take off and new life. So, I mean, it's really a fluke. There was no focus group. In 2003, when we planted lavender, no one used the word provenance about, you know, where is this thing grown? Who made it? What's in this? And so all those boxes were ticked by the time we came along to make stuff. So, you know, to this day, people are like clamor to the farm to see where it is and see how we do it. And it's really fun. It's like intensely busy, but really fun.
So our next question brings us on to the sexy topic of house admin and household chores. Housekeeping, basically, because it does often seem to be a real cause of tension in relationships. Like, who's taking the bins out? I'm always the one who's taking the bins out. Or, like, you didn't put the milk away. You didn't put that thing in the fridge. And so we wondered, how do you guys manage that? Do you have particular roles that you, those unsaid kind of roles that each person has, like, assigned tasks? And how do you manage that around your house?
We have very defined roles. I cook, she cleans.
Dishes.
We have defined roles in that I do basically nothing and you do everything.
I do everything.
I'm a very good washer-upper, but that's about...
She does ask me where her clothes are every once in a while and ask me when I'm going to be doing the washing next. Maybe I should look for a new wife, actually. Anyone?
We take it in turns. We don't define anything, really. No.
No, we're extremely both hands-on, and we've got a three-year-old son, and we just share responsibilities. If it feels right, if I want to cook for a dinner party, I cook, and then Kate tidies up, or, like, you know, if the washing needs to be done, we just whoever's there gets on it and does it. So it's kind of, if we need to, well, have time to change to rest or feed him when he's a baby, you just get on with it and do it, don't you? It's kind of hands-on.
So you naturally just share out the chore? I can't get my head around this. This is not how it is in my home at all with my partner.
But a division of roles is important. And I want to share with you a cartoon I read many, many years ago. It's drawings. And some guy asked the woman, how do you and your husband divide up chores? And she said, well, I decide the small things, and he decides the big things. And the guy says, well, give me an example. She says, well, I decide where we live, what his job will be, where we have vacations. Well, what does he decide? Oh, he decides whether to leave the European Union, what to do about President Trump. So that's how we divide things up in our household.
Nice.
I think it's very modern, though. I've got lots of friends who are like you two, sharing the cooking and stuff. I think that's quite exciting. And I am learning to cook. I'm a better cook than I was. But Bill's a really good cook, so it's quite a good deal. He cooks. I don't mind doing the dishes. But I think that's not uncommon.
So how about any questions from the audience at this stage? Have you got any questions that you'd love for these couples to answer, our couples to answer?
Yeah. Hello. Actually, as a little friendship group, we have slightly different opinions on this one. And how do you decide whether or not you're going to take your partner's name? And obviously, marriage can be a bit of an archaic tradition to some people, and therefore the woman taking the man's name also seems archaic. So how do you make that decision?
That was quite an easy one. My surname's Duffy, and Kate's is Halfpenny. I was like, there's no way you're having my name because my name's not as good as yours.
But he didn't take mine. And he struck a deal with me that our son, our child, if it was a girl, got my name. If it was a boy, got his. But he already knew it was a boy, so that was a dud deal.
So we got asked that question the entire lead up to our marriage. I think the two questions were, who's going to take each other's names? Are you doing that? And what are you wearing? Was like the big talking piece. Yeah. Are you both wearing dresses? Are you wearing a suit? So we spoke about it a lot. And I think we were both quite attached to our own last names. And then we went through like our family history and worked out where it stops. And Fran is the last of her last name. And that didn't make me want to change my name. And so her last name's Longsworth and mine's Proops. Neither are like, woo. And also together, so many characters if we double barreled. So we were like trying to work it out. Anyway, so we almost like just didn't make a decision. And then I did a speech on our wedding day, and maybe a day before, I decided I was going to take her name and not tell her. Very romantic. And so I stood up there and I sort of spoke about like the value of it, of like family, and hopefully we'll have a family ourselves one day, and I want us to have the same name. And so I did a big lie, and so like I would be honoured to take your name. Her mum was crying, her dad was crying, she was crying. Everyone was like gasping. I haven't changed my name yet.
She has made the huge legal move of opening a Boots Advantage card in my surname. Oh. And she changed her Instagram name, which, as we all know, is legally binding.
So, I will. And I have taken Fran's name, according to her parents, who now call me Mrs. L, which is nice.
And I don't know if it's a Canadian thing, but I don't know any woman who changed her name in my cohort and since. So I didn't even think about changing my name.
So it's not a tradition in Canada to change your name?
Well, I mean, it was, but in the last 30, 40 years, I think it's been very common to keep your name. And so I am Nancy Durham, and Bill is Bill Newton Smith. And sometimes I get called Mrs. Newton Smith, and I think, whoa, that sounds like double-barreled.
I get called Mr. Durham.
Yeah. A lot of mail to Mr. and Mrs. Durham and stuff like that. But no, but we didn't have kids together, so that was never an issue. And at airports, we just show our passports and, yeah. Mm. So it just didn't occur to me to change my name.
I think it's... Because just when we were planning the questions for this panel, and that question came up, and I'm engaged, and at some point we'll be getting married, and I have a son, so I have the same issue of going through on my own with him. But it really got me thinking, and I was like, I don't know now. I don't think I am going to. But is there anyone here who's getting married who's kind of like struggling to figure out what they're going to do, or you all just absolutely know? Anyone struggling? You're struggling.
I got married recently, and it only took me to move jobs to move my name because I had to get a new email address, and I was like, oh, we may as well do it now. So then I've just done it, but I haven't changed it legally. I haven't changed it on Instagram. It's still the same. Just changed it for work. It's like a weird pseudonym. It kind of works, but yeah.
I just like my fiancé's last name better than mine.
I can't think of any good reason for a woman to change her name. I have two daughters, and neither of them spent a moment thinking about it. They just kept their own names. It's the natural thing to do. That's who you are, and that's how you should be known.
It's a strong tradition here, I still think, for people to change their names.
You've got a smashing surname, so...
Yeah.
Who else has a question, and I'll dive forward the mic. Oh, right at the back, okay.
It was a question for Bill. Obviously, you mentioned you'd done some writing about love. I just wondered at what point you felt you'd learnt enough in life to be able to put that onto paper.
Okay, I wrote this when I was... in my 20s, and I think that I didn't know enough about life to be entitled to write about it then. And I'm not sure that I have enough about life now to be entitled to write about it. I think it's a subject which is hard to write about, and I think that what I pretended to do was to try and write about what constitutes love. And I think that's very difficult. I think a more honest thing is to try and articulate your ideal conception of a love relationship. And that, if I was writing this again, that's what I would try to do. I would honestly say, I can't say objectively what love is, but I can tell you what I think an ideal love relation would look like. But I'm not about to write another paper. I'm working on writing my memoirs, which is challenging enough.
Thank you. Has anyone else got a question?
Thank you very much.
Hey, it's for you in the middle, if that's okay. So you have a 3-year-old son. How did you keep your marriage between you two alive alongside being parents?
We're still working that one out. One of my answers to how to have a happy and fulfilled marriage and not argue was not to have children, because we have never argued so much since having Sylvester, and we would never change a thing, and we feel incredibly blessed, and it's amazing. However, you argue over the most ridiculous things, and actually I think half the time it's because we aren't, it isn't just about us, it's about the whole kind of, well, you know, it's your turn to look after him. Can you just watch him while I just go and do these emails? He just needs to eat, or, you know, he's done this, or where is he? Oh, he's running the bath and it's like he's flooding the kitchen, and it is getting better because we can leave him for at least 2 minutes now without him doing something to something. The cat or the house, but we're still working that out. I don't know if you ever work that out, especially not till they've left home, maybe.
I've got a 3-year-old son as well. I'm not married, but I'm with his dad. I think we don't do it enough, but going on dates, do you still go on, make sure you go on dates and stuff like that? Like, actually, yeah. But doing that, really making sure, I think, yeah, you should always carry on going on dates, because it just takes you out of the day-to-day, and it's like quality time and time away from whether it's kids, whether it's work, whether it's whatever it is that's going on, and it's just time for you to, whether it's you're sharing food or, I don't know, going for a walk, but actually, yeah. That's
Band-Aid babies. I don't understand that anyone in marriage difficulty would have a child to save their relationship. I don't understand.
There needs to be a stronger message about that not being the thing that's going to help.
Sterilise.
A lot of pressure.
Not a child.
Yeah. Very fulfilling. Yeah. Very challenging. We've both got 3-year-old sons, so... the male babies are the hardest. I've actually got a question. It's not on here. Well, I'm going to ask it and then I'll go back to the audience. What have you found has really helped you in your marriage and your relationship to kind of guide and inspire you, whether it's a role model, whether it's a book, whether it's a film, or, like, is there anything that you can think of that you
can... Notebook.
Oh, The Notebook. Oh, yeah. Maybe you don't.
James's parents are pretty cool and they've been together, God, I don't know, 40-odd years. And James's mum, now the kids have all left home, has sort of gone on sabbatical and travelling the world without his dad, because he doesn't want to go. But their relationship is quite dynamic and amazing, yeah. And... I think you've just got to stay true to yourself and don't kind of compromise, but equally listen to each other. It's the only way, really. It's all about communication.
Yeah.
Else you might as well give up right now.
Yeah.
It is like a business.
Yeah. It is like a business. Just throw it out there. It is like a business. In what way?
Well, you don't always love what you're having to do that day, but there's a fundamental there's a goal. Yeah, you are trying to get somewhere.
How about you guys? As you were kind of preparing for marriage, was there anything that sort of inspired you? Or
I don't think it was our parents. I mean, they're very happy and lovely, but I wouldn't describe them as like our love heroes. I think probably like just feeding off each other's like reactions to things. When I say like feeding off each other's reactions, if you do something lovely or thoughtful and then the other person like responds positively to that, then you like kind of keep going and like you do that again, or you're like, oh, they like that and I'll do this, you know, that sounds really weird.
So you like make a mental note of it.
But yeah, like none of those things. Yeah, basically just like doing nice things for each other and being thoughtful. And it's definitely about communication and spending alone time, having a like a phone ban when you're having dinner, like just don't look at your phone. No.
Number one thing.
Yeah, so like that is literally our number one rule in the household. If you're eating, your phone is away so that we can talk.
To follow or ideals to pursue, you've got to chart your own course. Human life is very distinct. Each individual is different from every other individual, and I would not go around looking for some model to emulate. I'd get on with working it out with your partner what you're going to do. The only thing I would say is that you should have some period each day in which you turn off your devices and you work with each other. And then you can talk about things. And you know what we do? We play backgammon twice a day. 20 minutes over lunch and a half an hour before dinner while we have our pre-dinner drink. And it's wonderful. It's what made Darwin's marriage a great success. And it's an important feature for us. Gives us a time in which nobody's distracting us. Mm-hmm. We can focus on each other and on beating the other.
I would just say, too, you know, we don't take anything too seriously. We laugh our heads off all the time. We'll be laughing later. And, you know, I don't know. It's fun. It's just fun being married to Bill. And we're the elderly couple on the panel. But, you know, I don't see myself. I work with Beth, and she keeps coming and going. She's 25, and I see her all day, and I think that's me. You know, I don't feel like old people. So I think...
We're not old.
Have a good time.
I think we just found our new love heroes.
Here.
Yeah.
Within the couples, who proposed and how did you make that decision and feel like you were ready to do it? How do I convince my boyfriend?
I proposed to Kate. We were going out to New York for a friend's wedding, engagement party. And rewind a little bit. We were hanging around in Clerkenwell and went to some jewellery shops because Kate likes to buy some jewellery. And she picked out this ring, which was like, that's absolutely disgusting. It's grotesque. It's the most vile thing. You cannot buy that for yourself. So cut to New York. I propose. I won't tell you how, because it didn't work out to plan. She said yes. And I said, look, babe, I've got you that ring, which you saw in that jeweller's. So we should go and pick it up and get home, which I said was disgusting. Of course I lied.
I said, yeah. No, I didn't. I said, I don't believe you. And he said, all right, phone your dad. So I picked the phone up, phoned my dad. He phoned my dad and said, I've just asked Kate to marry me. And I thought he was still messing about. And then he passed the phone and my dad was there. Congratulations. And I was like, oh, it's real. So, yeah.
I proposed to Fran. And I think from the very, from quite early on, I was like, don't you dare propose to me. I will be the one that does it. I just never, ever imagined being proposed to. I wouldn't know what to do. So it was always she just could never propose to me. And I kind of had a bit of a timeline because when I met Fran, she was a law student and she was like, we will never get married until I'm a qualified lawyer. So I knew I had at least 2 years until she qualified. So I had to plan it based on her kind of law world. And you didn't ask how, so I won't tell you how. That wasn't your question. Oh, I mean... there was a time frame that worked within our lifestyle that was now is a good window. I think that I guess we'd been together for 4 years. We went traveling for a year together and backpacked around the world and survived and thrived. And from quite early on, I think we both felt like this was the one and we just needed to bide some time. So I think anything, just to test the waters, live together, make sure that it really was the one, but nothing really changed, it only got better. So I think that within a few years, I kind of felt ready, but then I had to wait literally for my time period. So I would have proposed probably a year or so before, but I knew that there's a bit of an age difference between us, you wouldn't notice. And so I just needed to wait more on Fran's timings than mine.
I guess I always knew that I always saw when I was younger, I always knew that I was gay, but I always knew that I wanted to get married and have a family and do that whole thing. And so
when I met you, I always knew that, like, it was you that I wanted to marry. It won't cry, don't worry. For anyone else that came in late, I've already cried. It's really awkward. So, yeah, I always knew that I wanted to marry you, but I knew how much you wanted to propose, which sort of got me out of something similar to the house chores. And it was the most amazing proposal. Anyone, you should catch Gemma later to ask her about her proposal, because it was just unbelievable.
So what did I do? So Fran went to work one morning, but she wasn't going to work. I'd got one of her work friends to sign her, like, take the day off, and he just gave her an envelope, and then I just sent her on a treasure hunt around London to, like, some of our favourite places, and at each place she sort of received a gift and the next envelope. And that eventually led her to Hyde Park, which is where we had our first date. It was during the Olympics, and we were trying to get into the park, and it was closed, and we sat on a bench for, like, 5 hours talking. And so I'd somehow remembered the bench. And so she got to Hyde Park and then just started walking through, and then there were, like, petals and flowers everywhere, and then, like, a butler with some champagne, and then I was... Sorry, guys, I really set the bar. And then there was, like, I was on the bench with, like, a big bow, and then I proposed with a ring that I sort of took a big risk and just went for it and designed it with a friend of mine, and thank God she loved it. And then I'd also... We'd basically been collecting... We'd had, like, a box of, like, ticket stubs and, like, things that we'd been doing over the last, like, 4 years. And so I spent about 4 months making a scrapbook of all of those things and pictures. So then we had a picnic, and then we went on holiday. Oh, and then I organised a surprise dinner with our family. So that night she thought we were going out for dinner, but all of our family were there. And then we went on holiday.
That's amazing.
It took a while to prepare. So I had, like, 2 years to think about it.
Wow. Thank you. That was incredible. So to wrap things up, we have one more question. What are your top tips for a long-lasting, happy, healthy marriage?
Oh, my top tip. Well, he said it a lot, but I think community, like, definitely, like, honesty, transparency, authenticity, communication, and be as vulnerable as you dare to be.
I think it's sort of on the communication thing, but say sorry, even if you're not sorry, even if you don't think you're in the wrong, because chances are in a day, a week, a month, you're probably not even going to remember what the argument was about or that you say sorry, so you sort of gave in. But it means that you can go to sleep that night, not go to sleep on an argument, which I guess is, like, my second thing. So, yeah, just say sorry, even if you don't mean it. But say it like you mean it, but just say it.
Did you say you don't go to sleep? You can go to sleep, you can finish an argument and resolve it and then go to sleep.
Yeah,
I never got my head around that tip, don't go to sleep on an argument, because I can't actually I have to sleep to resolve it, like, the next day. So that's interesting that you can. How do you do that?
Just say sorry.
The saying sorry.
That usually just draws a line under it. The other person's fine. You feel a bit annoyed that you've said sorry, but then you can go to sleep and wake up in the morning. It's fine.
It just has to be, like, just do not complain about the little stuff. You know, it just doesn't matter. And there's so many things that drive people crazy about each other. And I think I'm really lucky, because if I get on your nerves, you don't really tell me very much. But I, you know, Bill cooks and leaves the cooker in a mess. And I just try to just, like, doesn't matter, right? Wipe it up. Stuff like that. I think all that, and don't try to change the person ever, because people don't change. It doesn't work. Yeah. So embrace the person, love them, accept them, love all their stuff you don't like, and you might even, like, love them more. So that it's it. All that little stuff screws up marriages all the time and doesn't have to.
They covered it all. They covered it all. Yeah. Communication.
Carry on being intimate on many different scales. Because, like, when you first meet and you honeymoon, you're extremely intimate. But then continue being in every way, from meals out or having a little drink together or just having that conversation before you get into bed and then go to sleep.
Don't take your phone to bed. I know I need to stop taking my phone to bed and sitting and looking at everyone else's mundane nonsense before going to sleep. Yeah. Leave your phone out of the bedroom. Communicate. Say sorry. And we just laugh anyway if we've had a row. We can't sustain that anger for very long.
Thank you so much to everyone. Thank you for your questions. Thank you to Knot and Pop and the Ace Hotel for putting on this wonderful event. And thank you for inviting us to host this panel. It's been such an honour. Thank you to our, I'm going to say again, our wonderful couples for answering all of our questions and all of the audience's questions. And thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here with you tonight. If you'd like to hear more about Project Love, then head to loveprojectlove.com where you can find out all about our podcasts and products. A little sell there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast show. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you're feeling stuck in your love life and finding dating to be frustrating and exhausting, then come and join Get Ready for Love, our 30-day online course to transform your love life. As well as having us, Selena and Vicky, as your co-pilots throughout your journey, bringing you a lesson every day and videos and audio tutorials bursting with energy and love, you'll also be welcomed into our private Facebook group, The Love Zone, where you can hang out with like-minded women and ask for help and guidance whenever you need it. It really is gorgeous in there. Head over to loveprojectlove.com/get-ready-for-love to sign up. And if you'd like to find out more about love coaching with me, Vicky, then head to coaching and courses over on loveprojectlove.com.